DT Max sets out to chart David Foster Wallace's tormented, anguished, and often triumphant battles to succeed as a novelist as he fights off depression and addiction to emerge with his masterpiece, Infinite Jest, before his untimely death by suicide at the age of 46 in 2008. David Foster Wallace is one of the most innovative and influential authors of the last 25 years, a writer whose distinctive style and example not only changed the way a generation wrote, but also how it lived. In his biography, Every Love Story is a Ghost Story, DT Max gives readers a glimpse into the brilliant mind of David Foster Wallace and provides insight into both his genius and his struggle to stay sane. DT Max is currently a staff writer for The New Yorker and has worked as a journalist and editor at publications ranging from The New York Observer to Elle. His long essay on David Foster Wallace, The Unfinished, David Foster Wallace's Struggle to Surpass Infinite Jest, was published in the March 9th issue of 2009. And DT Max, welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So ultimately, I assume this book came out of that piece.
Yeah, well, you know, when I had, I mean, that original New Yorker piece from 2009 was a long kind of examination of just why. Well, what had led David to commit suicide almost exactly 4 years ago today? You know, I just felt I had more to do. I just felt like I had only scratched the surface of this incredibly complicated, interesting, and brilliant literary figure. I just wasn't ready to be, I just wasn't ready to move on to the next thing. And you know, the thing that I noticed particularly as I would go to things like the memorial services after David's death, or just, you know, just sort of be in different places and meet people and hear them talk about David, was that he was growing as somebody they were interested in. You know, some people, most writers, after they die, there's a period of eclipse. Sometimes they're rediscovered, sometimes they're not. But with David, there's been no period of eclipse. You know, people have grown more interested. You can see, just go on the web. I mean, David has become more interesting to people by the month.
When you look at the telling of this story, and this book itself is very understanding, it is sympathetic, it is affectionate, what was your relationship prior to his death with David Foster Wallace?
Well, you're speaking of my literal relationship with him. I didn't know David. I had only seen him once in person at the publication party for Infinite Jest, and we hadn't spoken. But I'd always been really interested in David. He and I were almost exactly contemporaries, and one of the things that was so engrossing about writing the biography was, you know, for instance, you know, David, when he's in his teens, is listening to Jethro Tull. Well, you know, I listen to Jethro Tull.
Right.
I mean, what was kind of fascinating was that David's temptations were my temptations, and David's day-to-day life was similar to my day-to-day life. It was just really an extraordinary feeling to be walking alongside him as he grows up. And I felt that if the biography, you know, could capture a little bit of what it was like to be alive as a young person in the 70s, and to go to college in the 80s, you know, and to be a young writer or artist in the 90s, like, I would have done something. And that's part of what my aim was in the book.
Give us a sense of the reaction in the literary community when Infinite Jest landed. What was that like?
You know, I mean, Infinite Jest, we're in 1996, and David has, David Foster Wallace had not been heard from for a number of years. And people vaguely, I think, knew that he'd had some difficulties. In fact, he'd attempted suicide. He'd been in McLean, the psychiatric hospital. He'd been in a halfway house for addicts. You know, we all vaguely knew this, but nobody really, really knew it. Nobody knew what he was up to. And Infinite Jest, you know, just when it was published in 1996, and it was very, very well published by Little Brown, it just shocked people how modern it felt. It was just one of those books that didn't feel like it was, like, it's like the books around it. I mean, some novels are slightly better or worse than other novels. Some writers have more or less talent. This just felt like something from outer space. You know, it's just so different. I mean, part of it's about well, really fictionalized version of the halfway house he's in, and the other part of it's about a kind of precocious group of kids at a tennis academy. And the way that this joins together to create a kind of portrait of the modern world at the turn of the millennium was just astonishing. It stands up. I mean, Infinite Jest stands up. And a little bit of what I try to do in every love story is a ghost story is try to explain to you how that book can still be, you know, feel so current. In fact, in my mind, it really feels more modern than the novels being published today.
What was his reaction to it?
Yeah, you know, David Foster Wallace was a man full of insecurities and a lot of self-hatred. Person after person I interviewed said, you know, I never met anyone so full of self-loathing as David. So David didn't really like the praise. The praise frightened him. It made him feel that he had to do something as good as Infinite Jest again. There's a letter that I found when I was researching Every Love Story is a Ghost Story where he writes to Don DeLillo, the novelist, and writes, you know, he I think had just gotten a year off from his teaching gig at Illinois State University, and he said, I can't get out of my head the idea that the world expects, nay, demands another piece of superb novel-length prose. He says, you know, I know that isn't the case, but I keep feeling that. And I think that worry that he was expected to give them another one just like the other one was, you know, it was devastating for him. He was a very sensitive man. You know, the one reason I think people feel such attachment to him is he's sort of like a more sensitive version of all of us.
Talk a little bit about that, about what it is of his writing and his style that touched readers in such a profound way.
You know, I think what touches readers about David Foster Wallace is both his style and the person whom we believe is behind the style. The style is questing. It's fast. It's awkward. It's deliberately, it's deliberately unbeautiful. It feels incredibly modern. You feel the person. You always feel the person behind it. You always feel there's an individual here who's hurting and who wants to be heard and wants to be understood. You know, there's a wonderful essay that he wrote about, you know, what fiction should be really, in which he kind of forecasts his own position in the world. And he says, the next real literary rebels in this country might well emerge as some weird bunch of anti-rebels, born oglers, who dare somehow to back away from ironic watching, who have the childish gall actually to endorse single entendre principles. In other words, he was forecasting who he would become to us, which is to say he was going to be a guy who cared. He was going to be a guy who wrote about the world without thinking, oh, this is really amusing, or this is really, you know, funny, or this is really just something I can sort of stay away from. It's that insistence that he would engage with the world, which he fulfills, you know, that I think made him such an interesting figure to write about in a biography. I mean, it's true that he's a ghost story, as the title Every Love Story is a Ghost Story would suggest, but he's a very particular kind of ghost who sort of suffuses our atmosphere and is always beside us.
When you look at his brilliance as a writer, was the torment always there, or were there moments of clarity?
Well, you know, one thing that I found in researching Every Love Story is a Ghost Story, which I didn't know when I wrote the New Yorker article, was that David was much sicker earlier than I had realized. I mean, I came into possession of a medical kind of a medical self-summary he gave to a doctor at the end of his life, and in that self-summary, he talks about having anxiety feelings when he's like 9 or 10. And then, you know, I realized that by college he's in a pretty deep torment. So I think that the answer, you know, is that he was always tormented, but that the clarity really comes out of the torment. He's treated for his depression. He has this intense depression, and he's treated for the first time right after college with a drug called Nardole, an antidepressant. You know, and from that period on, you know, he's highly functional. I mean, he's pretty neurotic, and he's extraordinarily sensitive, but he's highly functional, and this is the time when he gives us all the writing. You know, that's Infinite Jest has an incredible clarity to it that I think it comes out of the anxieties that are always kind of hovering around it. I mean, I don't think a person without David's anxiety could have written Infinite Jest. It's a very anxious book.
Was he being treated toward the end of his life?
You know, the David's suicide in 2008 was a product of a couple of things. I had originally thought that a lot of the reason that David went off of Nardole, which he does about a year before he dies, and you know he never gets back on it successfully, and he has electroshock, and he tries other antidepressants, but he never stabilizes, because I think antidepressants, there's quite a bit of art to antidepressants. It's not just science. And, you know, his doctors could never find the right one for him again. I had thought, Nardole is a very hard drug to tolerate, and I had thought that the Nardole, that he'd gone off Nardole maybe because it was just so hard on his system. I don't believe that anymore. One of the things I feel very strongly, having written the biography, is that he really got off it because he was just so dissatisfied with the way he was writing and the way he was experiencing life. You know, he just wanted to break through, and he made the mistake of thinking that he could break through by getting off of an antidepressant that he'd been on for, he goes on it in 1985, so almost 20 years.
What was the definition of breakthrough for him? Did he define it? Did he know what he wanted?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he did, actually. You know, his last novel, for every love story as a ghost story, I had access to the drafts of The Pale King, which was published after his death, and which some listeners may have read.
Yeah.
That book is really a kind of a attempt to figure out who he wants to be as a person. And in that book, he's trying to search for some sort of almost Buddhist mindfulness. So there's a passage, for instance, in the book. This is not a passage in the book. It's in one of his notebooks, which he uses to write the book, where he sort of talks about what one of his characters would like. But it's also what David would like. He says, bliss, a second-by-second joy and gratitude at the gift of being alive and conscious, lies on the other side of crushing boredom. Pay close attention to the most tedious thing you can find, and his examples are tax returns or televised golf, and in ways a boredom like you've never known will wash over you and just about kill you. Ride these out, and it's like stepping from black and white into color, like water after days in the desert, instant bliss in every atom. That's the breakthrough David wanted. You know, he wanted to get to it through his writing. He wanted to get to it through meditation, which he practiced. He wanted to get to it just through a kind of mindfulness about the world. And I think he felt that he couldn't do it on an antidepressant, that he wasn't really sure what he was feeling, but he wasn't feeling what he wanted to feel. You know, David always wanted to be the best student in the class, and I think even when it came to sort of relaxation, David wanted to be the most relaxed and the most mindful. It's kind of ironic and contradictory. But, I think a lot of things about David were ironic and contradictory.
The name of the book is Every Love Story is a Ghost Story, A Life of David Foster Wallace. The book is published by Viking. D.T. Max, thank you very much for being with us this morning. Best of luck with the book and talking about David. Thank you very much for sharing your stories with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Every Love Story is a Ghost Story, published by Viking. Coming up next, the Congressional Corner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.